This morning, I would like to preach a message that I don't think is so new, so strange. So, actually, I've preached on this subject before, and sometimes I don't know how often to preach on this on a subject, but I do think I guess it's just been recently on my mind again, just looking at some of the things surrounding us and so forth. It just was impressed in my mind that I think it's time for us to speak on this subject again. And that is, I was a little bit struggling a little bit to know exactly how to title it. And I know there's different titles that maybe would be more fitting. I'm not quite sure. But it kind of combined two titles together. And one is Suffering Love, and another title could be, or a subtitle could be, Non-Resistance. Suffering Love, or Non-Resistance, I'll just write it up here. We all like the word love. It's very, feels very heartwarming and all that stuff, all the things that go with love, and feels very, very comforting, very, we like the feelings of love. We like to feel loved. We like those things going on. And, but this suffering love is a little different. It's a little different. It's a suffering love, and it's a love. It's a love that doesn't. In the end, I do believe that we have, when we walk in suffering love, and when we allow ourselves to suffer because of love in our hearts towards someone. Or love in our hearts because of a situation, whatever that may be. In the end, I think it brings the same, or even in a deeper way, a satisfaction and a peace and a rest when we walk in that. We experience that, and I think it's a wonderful thing when a family and a church is experiencing love, and you know somebody's needs help. Get their wood together. You know, it's a fun thing to love. It's a fun thing to pour ourselves into, and get the chainsaw out and love in that way. And it's a good feeling, and it's whatever, all those things. But suffering love is a little different. It hits us differently. It doesn't feel quite so appealing. It doesn't seem quite so natural. What isn't natural? It's not, you know, the other love may also not be, and which I think is the same love, but it's expressed in different ways. It's the love of Christ. Also, when we get the chainsaw out, we may not feel like doing it. We may have had our long day ourselves at work, and still there's that to do. There's a sacrifice that happens, but I do think the suffering love goes even deeper, because it never feels good. I don't think, to the flesh, to suffer. And yet suffering love is what we're called to. And non-resistance. And non-resistance is also a term that we use, to express this. And it seems a little bit like it's maybe missing. I know we use it a lot and we use that term, but I feel like it misses a bit of the message, the heart of the message, the heart of the message. I'm not quite sure that it encapsulates the thought that we gather from scripture and so forth as clearly as suffering love would. In a sense, it does. Non-resistance would be a little bit more in light of not retaliating, not fighting back. Suffering love goes even a little bit further than that. Is why I think that the non-resistance is a little bit. I think we understand what that means, though. If somebody says that you believe in non-resistance, I think that's an okay term to use. But sometimes maybe just a little bit confused, or maybe I know this world looks on at those statements as being wimps and as not having any backbone or whatever. All, but I will say that if someone truly responds in suffering love and responds in non-resistance in a very clear biblical way, he's got more backbone, would you say, more substance than someone that gives in and pulls the gun out, pulls the knife out, pulls that thing out. He's got more, much more. He's not a wimp. You're not a wimp to suffer when others try to kill you, or try to, whether that be with words or with an actual gun or whatever that may be. I have some questions for us to think of in light of the message this morning. I hope just because I'm preaching this message in such a common way of thinking, my goal is partly to preach in a way for the younger generation to catch, to establish some foundation for you to think, ways to think of and patterns that the way that we think will pattern us and will help us when we face those things in life that, end up challenging that, in our lives, challenging our love for each other and love for God and so forth, but just in responding when we are trespassed, so to speak. That's part of my goal is this morning just to bring that foundation again to you younger children to remember those things and the very clear teachings of Christ, because the world thinks otherwise. The world teaches us otherwise, and even the so-called Christian world teaches us otherwise, and it is not right. It is not scriptural. How do we respond when somebody cuts in front of us on the road? How do you respond? How do I respond? Nobody else is in the car with you, in your car with you. How do you respond when your neighbor, or maybe not your neighbor, you're just driving down the road and he does a bad one, just cuts in front of you, and what all goes on right down in here? I think it's foundational in our response. If we don't check that spirit, whatever wants to rise up, if we don't check that spirit, I think we'll go the wrong way. I think we'll go the wrong way. We'll go the wrong way in on this subject. We'll go to places where we shouldn't be going, and where Jesus clearly teaches us not to go. How should we respond when others or when we find ourselves in an argument? How many of you ever found yourself in an argument? You're better than me. I found myself in an argument. How do you respond? Okay. Sometimes we land in those arguments before we even realize it. Okay? I find, at least myself, sometimes we land in a situation for some reason, the setup, the circumstances, whatever, and we start responding and and it lead, one thing leads to the next, and suddenly we realize, ooh, things are not good. I'm trying to outsmart, outdo the other person, and that's not good. And but what do you do when your eyes come open to that realization that, oops, I'm in an argument? What do I do? I think this subject speaks into that. How do I respond? How do I respond? How do I respond? How should we respond? How should we respond when we are called for duty? And that call for duty, many people understand it to be the call to serve in the army, in the U.S. Army, at least that is. I'm not sure what other countries talk about when they're called to the army, but specifically, the U.S. Army, the U.S. government looks at it as a call for duty. And it sounds like it's your obligation. It sounds like it's something that you're supposed to do. It's your duty, you know. What should you do? What should we do? You're 18 years old? You're 21 years old? I forget exactly how old they go when, but if something like that would happen. I know right now, at this point, we're not facing that. But part of the reason also why I am bringing this to our attention is the way this world is and where things are at with war and some of those things could change overnight. They could happen very, 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 very quickly. I don't want to strike fear in your hearts as parents or as children. I don't want to strike fear in your heart, but we're at a very vulnerable time right now. I don't know what's going to happen. I have no idea what's going to happen, but there's countries talking about pulling out nuclear weapons. There's countries talking about pulling out their bigger weapons, you know, especially over in Ukraine and Russia right now, you know, all that conflict. And when you bring a bigger one, the other country brings a bigger one. And there's nothing about suffering love. There's nothing about non-resistance there. No, it's whoever's got the biggest and the bulliest thing is going to try to win. And we as a country could be hurled into a very major war where the U.S. would consider basically just trying to fight for freedom now, you know. And that's where you and I will get pressured. Where is our stand? We maybe are fearful of the Russians taking over. So should we as Christians fight for a Christian nation? Brother Joe, if you want more details, more depth than that, I think a message that Brother Joe has preached, I forget the title, but numerous times he's touched on the subject I forget the other title, but down the line of the call for duty and the subject of non-resistance in a deeper way. I would recommend what Brother Joe has preached on that subject, and I hope it's recorded. I'm not sure if it was. I know Bible studies and things like that, we've had that subject as well. But I think we're familiar with that. But those are areas where we have to ask that question. And I know Myron and Sherwin and Sean and Reuben, you're at that age. Nathaniel, you're at that age, you know, where if something like that would happen, what would you do? What would you do? Suddenly, Daddy can't answer for you. But where is your foundation? Or would you just go to war, you know? My prayer is that you have a foundation to build on, that you would be able to say, no, I can't because I believe the Bible teaches me to do this. And it doesn't matter what happens. I was looking a little bit in history. I don't know how accurate this is, just from where it was coming from. You know, the internet holds still for anything, right? Or the paper, the page on the internet. But so I was looking a little bit on some history on what happened to those that refused to fight. In World War I, somebody made the comment that if you refused to fight, you had to basically, you still had to go to war. They forced you, whatever, but they put you, the commander, if you refused to fight, the commander was not legally allowed to just shoot you and say, well, get out of the way and we'll put somebody in there that, whatever. They weren't allowed to, but they did these things, such as putting you in a very dangerous spot to deliver mail right out by where the fighting was going on purpose to just, you know, fine if they get rid of you. No problem, you know, if they get rid of you. But if we face death, in the face of this subject, that's really where it tells us what we believe. It's really where it tells us what we believe in the face of death. So anyway, how should we respond? The Bible has some very clear teaching on this subject. I kind of broke it into, and I'm not quite sure, I wasn't quite sure exactly how to break it into three different points, because I feel like it's so intertwined, and so I hope I don't bring confusion with that. But I asked the question then, what about retaliation or getting even, in which that falls into the question that I had asked earlier, but I have a point that I wanted to bring out with that. If you turn to Matthew 5, Matthew 5 is Jesus' Sermon on the Mount there. Matthew 5, verse 38 to 48. I do have a number of scriptures, but I may not read everything that I have, just because I don't want to lose you with the just with so much reading. I want to also, I might just point them out and pull out a couple of verses here and there sometimes. We'd like to read Matthew 5. I think is very foundational into our attitude of, especially in light of retaliation. And of course that falls into that question that I asked you earlier about what do we do, how do we respond when somebody cuts in front of us on the road. That would fall into the line of retaliation. That's not talking about going to war or anything like that. But the spirit of love is what will give us some guidance on that. Matthew 5, 38 to 48 says, "Ye have heard that it hath been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if any man will sue thee at the law, take away thy coat, let him have thy cloak also. And whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. Give to him that asketh thee, and from him that would borrow of thee, turn not thou away. Ye have heard that it hath been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. For he maketh the sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth rain on the just and unjust. For if ye love them which love you, what reward have ye? Do not even the publicans the same? If you salute your brethren only, what do ye more than others? Do not even the publicans so? Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect." Profound, very, very rich, deep things here. What do we do when somebody cuts in front of us? Jesus here tells us, if they ask of you a coat, now it doesn't give us the reason why he's asking a coat, but he says, let him have your cloak also. In other words, let him take advantage of you. Let him do that. And if you hate, if you used to hear that, love your enemy, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you. And I think that despitefully use you, I know maybe they persecute you. Here in America, we don't face persecution like they do in many other countries. We do, in a sense, we can face persecution. Depending where we find ourselves, we do face certain levels of persecution, but it's not in the severity that many other countries do, some other countries do, some other places. But I believe here in America and in our communities and in whatever There are situations where we may feel despitefully used, despite where there's a disgruntled look down attitudes and things like that going. That's around everywhere. But Jesus tells us, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you. It doesn't matter. Really what I see is it doesn't matter if it's the worst kind of crime against me or a more moderate thing against me or against you. We have no right to harbor ill will, ill feelings. We have zero right to do that, to defend ourselves especially in a way to bring another person down, to lift ourselves up. Never. I think in a careful way, I think it's okay for us to stand for what is right and in humility stand for what's right and so forth. I think I don't want to confuse that. We need to stand for what's right. But if we let the flesh get in there and we stump another person down because he's pushed me down, that's never right. It's never okay. Suffering love and Jesus' teaching here says it's not right. But instead, even not just simply do that, bless them. That's lifting it up higher yet. Bless them that curse you and persecute you and hate you and so forth. There's no room for retaliation. There's no room for me. here a number of years ago, there was a man a little older than I. Which I knew him from youth. I knew him before he was, even before he was converted, which I'm not quite sure that he was converted with some of, at least the fruits of conversion were no longer there when this thing happened. I'm not quite sure whether he ever was born again. I don't know. God knows. God's the judge. But he definitely was not living a right life. In the story that I'm sharing here, he was driving along the road one day and on the interstate, and I believe he was driving a truck and trailer, not a semi, but just a heavy, regular truck with a trailer with some tools in the back or something. And there was another vehicle that had, I think it was some for RV with a trailer as well. Or at least an RV, I think it was an RV with a trailer, if I remember right. It doesn't really matter, some of those details, but something happened between the two of them. They didn't know each other. Okay, this RV person and the one that was driving the truck and trailer. They didn't know each other. They're just driving down the road, But as they were going, something happened between them that one got irked at the other and sped up. The other one, of course, that was irked, sped up, passed in front of the other one and, slowed down, make it mean for him. You ever seen those things happen? One time I was in school. This is another story, school, and the driver did that. We went on a field trip. The driver did that. Christians. It's not good. You should never do that. Jesus never would have done that. And his people should never do that. Just never do it. Anyway, that happened with this person. And this kept going on. And somebody has to lay down. Or else it just goes on and on until it gets to something bad. In frustration, in anger, I will say, he pulled out his gun. This professing Christian. This is the person that I was talking about earlier, about this RV and this truck and trailer. There's one in the truck and trailer, the one that I know, had a pistol in his front truck there, in the truck there with him. And as he was passing this time he was so frustrated at this other guy, pulled it out and shot the tires. Okay, he didn't shoot the person, but he shot the tires. That's totally wrong. It's totally wrong. Why did that happen? Why did that happen? I don't think it all happened. I don't think that happened overnight. It's a pattern of thinking. It's a way of thinking. And if we train or if we don't take care of those things, those little irks, when somebody pulls in front of us today, that's why I said it, where if we don't deal with those things today, it will lead to us pulling out something, which he ended up having. There was a court case about it. I'm not even sure where that all landed. But it leads us to doing things that we never wish we would have done. And consequences, even in this natural world, are not good at all. But Jesus has a higher calling for us. He says, bless, let them go slow in front of me. Just go slow. And maybe if you have to pass, if they go so slow and you feel like you have to pass, don't gun it past them. And rather smile at them, and not in a mocking smile either. You know, we should smile and be respectful and give them plenty of room and don't do the same thing back to them. And if they do it again to you, maybe you ought to just stop at a rest area and let them go on. Let them go on if they want to. You know, Jesus tells us to lay that down. Jesus is commanding us to do that. We should bless. We should exercise good feelings. Now, does my flesh, am I perfect in those things that in a way that I'm removed from struggle? No. I struggle with these things too. I struggle with these things too. When somebody crosses my path, I struggle with them. You struggle with them. We all struggle with these things, but it's what we do with that that makes such a big difference. In the end, we are commanded to love even when wrong things happen. We're commanded to do that. And if you just do it to people that are nice to you, Jesus says, to your brethren only, to the people in the church, to the people that are only nice to you in the church, that's not good. You're no better than the publicans and sinners. He gives us the example of God sending sunshine. Like right now, we have sunshine. Well, the neighbor down the road, he's not a Christian. It should be black around him, right? That's how we think. God doesn't think that way. God doesn't think that way. He is very, very merciful. And we ought to have that mercy as well. By the way, suffering. Just a little definition on suffering. We heard last Sunday about how was that message? It was, I remember that picture that Mark had about the dross, and it was a very beautiful picture about all the dross around us and the little bit of gold that's in that little pile that he had, and all the fire that takes. Well, this suffering love will also be a little bit like, it'll put some fire to us in that, it will take away the fight. It will take away the resistance. Suffering, is basically bearing undergoing pain, inconvenience or damage, permitting or allowing. In other words, it's inconvenient. It's not pleasure. It's not a fun thing. It hurts my business. It hurts my ego. It hurts maybe even my reputation. That's suffering. But that suffering, if we allow the love of God to be there in the middle of those things, it produces good fruit. And it also, that foundational truth or foundational concept will help us when we even think about going to war. When we go, when there's, you know, just some of these other areas where we are affected. 1 Thessalonians 5:15 says, "See that none render evil for evil to any man, but ever follow that which is good, both among yourselves and to all men." That means it's not only here among us as brethren. Of course, I believe it really needs to be especially so among us. Among us. Follow, ever follow that which is good. And things that edify, and things that encourage, and things that speak good, speaking good of each other even, and so forth. It says, none render evil to evil, or evil for evil to any man. And it says, but follow that which is good both among yourselves and, it says, to all men. Everyone, everywhere. Gas station, when you're talking to the, when you're waiting in line there to pay, and the other person in front of you is making a fuss about his bill, and all you wanted is just a receipt, and you're just pressed for time, and you can just, it can be so frustrating. But never, ever let those feelings control you. The feelings of frustrations. Rather bring those things to the foot of the cross and ask God, like Sean was sharing this morning, for help. 1 Peter 3:8-12. Actually, I'm not going to read that all. And again, there in verse 9, it says, "Not rendering evil for evil, nor railing for railing, but contrariwise blessing, knowing that you are thereunto called, that ye should inherit a blessing. For he that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips that they speak no guile." And that guile, I found interesting, is a trickery word. Using your lips to speak trickery in a way to catch somebody and to trip them up. You have fault, you have an issue with someone, and I think it fits in right in the context. You know, Paul is addressing the subject here of having love in our heart, not evil for evil. In other words, if I do something against you, you try to do something against me. If you slash out bad words against me, I slash bad words at you. I throw bad words at you. He says that should never be. He said, but in contrary wise, there should be a blessing coming forth from our lips. And it's specifically talking about the tongue. It says, refrain your tongue from doing what is evil, and your lips that they speak no guile. In other words, we can do things on purpose to trip somebody up because we would like to see them fall down. We would like to do that, and those things are wrong. That's not suffering love. So what about self-defense? What about self-defense? I think these things are very, very good for me to think about and ponder on and to exercise myself in the smallest detail. Because in a bigger detail, you will respond without thinking. Let me give you an example. I'm not quite sure. Yeah, I still wonder if I responded right. I question just a bit. But there was one time in a situation there in Hong Kong, traveling with my uncle. And it wasn't exactly self-defense. I was defending him. But he and I and my other uncle, two of my uncles were there. They were Amish there. And they weren't living there, but they had traveled with me. I had traveled with them, actually. And they were older brothers there. And traveling in the train, and in Hong Kong, certain areas it gets so, so tight that you hang on to the bar, and you have people literally all around you tight against you, hanging on to the bar that goes across the top so you don't fall. But certain areas also, there's less people, And we were getting to an area where there was less people on the train, and so there was a fair amount of space around us, and the three of us were talking there. And there was another individual that was standing awfully close to us. I wasn't thinking about it right at first, but I was like, why is this person so close to my uncle and to us there? And he was just standing there looking down. You know, I thought it almost looked like he was sleeping, but he was looking down, had his hand out, and was reaching in my uncle's, those little packs in the front, you know, that you can wear on yourself, travel packs. He was reaching in there, and that's where we kept our passports, our money, things like that. He was reaching in there real carefully, trying to, had opened the zipper and had his fingers in there. What's your response? My response was reflexes, okay? Probably, maybe not the best reflexes, okay? I was like, hey! And kind of, I didn't box him or anything like that, but kind of punched his belly just a little bit. Maybe harder than I realized because of my fear and whatever. I wasn't sure what was going on. I was only maybe 21 years old at the time. But what is our response? You know, that moment catches us off guard. Caught me off guard. I was not ready for that. Okay? I'm not quite sure that I'm not quite sure that I did the right thing in whatever. It's not, that doesn't, I wonder, you know, what would Jesus have done? Maybe he would have brought it to my uncle's attention in a different way, and maybe, hey, uncle, why don't you step over a little bit? He's needing something in your pouch, or something, you know, maybe give him a little bit more of a little bit way to move away type of thing. I'm not sure where to put that, but what I'm saying is, my way of thinking, if somebody would come in those doors right now with a gun to shoot us, because, you know, those things happen in churches nowadays, what would my reaction be? It's good for us to think some of those things, but it's the little responses that I respond toward my wife now, the little responses toward my sons and daughters, those little irk points, the little responses that I have towards that car that so rudely slammed the brakes in front of me because they were mad at me. Those little irk points, those little things, my responses will equal a greater response when there's a gun pointed at me. If I would have a pistol by my side, you know what my first reaction would be? Pull that thing out in defense of you and of the family. And I don't think that's what Jesus would have done. See, those little things are where I believe we can miss. We can do something about it now to shape our minds that, and even to protect ourselves from making the wrong choice at a more difficult time. So what about self-defense? I don't believe that is self-defense in that way at all is right. Actually, I don't think self-defense is right. Self needs to die. It shouldn't be defended in that way at all. Also in Romans 12, 9 through 21, I won't read those that passage because of time. Romans 12, 9 to 21. Verse 14 says, bless them that persecute you, bless and curse not, period. Bless and curse not. And a curse would be, of course, the ultimate would be pulling out that gun and shooting. That'd be a curse towards someone. That'd be the ultimate. But bless and curse not is also cursing with our lips, cursing, I should have looked that word up, I guess, but it's the opposite of blessing. You know, you see the bless and curse not. We shouldn't be doing anything but seeking to bless. Rejoice with them that rejoice and weep with them that weep. And also, in verse 18, it says, if it be possible, as much as lieth within you, live peaceably with all men. As much as lies within you, live peaceably with all men. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord. And that's where I think, for me, I find the greatest refuge is to remember God is ultimately in control. I do not need to take things in my hands. And I think that helps us. If we continually feed on those things, on that way of thinking, and we realize that God is really in control of regardless what the situation is that we face, even that car that just got done pulling out in front of us, or maybe we find ourselves in that argument, and we realize that we're arguing, we're saying something that's being argumentative. And we would like to set the other person straight. But God's word says that we should not do that. He says, avenge not yourself. Don't try to avenge yourself. And even if you feel like it's wrong what the other person is saying and so forth, be careful not to avenge yourself, but rather give place into wrath if somebody else uses words and accuses and it may not even be about you. It may be about somebody else that things are being said and so forth. We need to be careful that we don't try to take things in our own hands. And it's good for us to remember, vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord, that God will do that. God will take care of all things, whatever things are not in order. God will do that. I don't mean to say that we can't speak the truth and stand for truth and so forth. But we should be able to do so in humility. Wisdom that comes from above is first pure and it's peaceable and the words I want to, or that come to my mind is the easy to be entreated part. And so the suffering love, I think, will help us with that. Turn your Bibles to Luke chapter 6. Luke chapter 6. this is really too big of a subject just to have just a message on, but I really would just desire to stir up your minds to think on these things and to allow you to ponder these things and live it like the scripture says, line upon line, precept upon precept. If we can get these things as young people, you know, at your age, Jaden and Daniel and Marcus Andrew, you know, some of you younger generation and Seth, you know, if you can get those things now, you get a little bit here and you get a little bit there and you get a little bit more when you're Reuben's age and a little older and so forth. That can be so a part of you that when your reflexes respond, you respond in a Christ-like way. Luke chapter 6, verse 27. So again, talking about loving your enemies, it says, but I say unto you which hear, love your enemies, do good to them which hate you, bless them that curse you, and pray for them which despitefully use you. And unto him that smiteth thee on the one cheek, offer to him the other also. And him that taketh away thy cloak, forbid not to take thy coat also. Give to every man that asketh of thee, and of him that taketh away thy goods, ask them not again. And as ye would that men should do unto you, do ye also to them likewise. For if ye love them which love you, what thank have ye? For sinners love those who love them. And if ye would do, I'm sorry, and if ye do good to them which do good to you, what thank have ye? For sinners do even the same. And if ye lend to them of whom ye hope to receive, what thank have ye? For sinners lend to sinners to receive as much again. But love ye your enemies, and do good, and lend, hoping for nothing again. And your reward shall be great, and ye shall be the children of the Highest. For he is kind unto the thankful and to the unthankful. Be ye therefore merciful, as your Father also is merciful. In Matthew it says, "Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father, which is in heaven, is perfect." And anyway, there's a high calling for us to go for. In 1 Corinthians chapter 6, there's a few verses there. Still talking about self-defense, in 1 Corinthians 6 it talks about taking someone to law. That's of course taking it pretty far, at least I would think. You know, if I loan something to Brother Mose and Brother Mose isn't giving it back to me, and then I get frustrated with it, so I go to the police department, write up a report, and say, "Hey, he's taking it from me. He stole it from me. I'm taking him to law, or maybe he's not paying his bill for whatever." That's what 1 Corinthians 6 is talking about. That whole thing. He says, "Dare any of you having a matter against a brother go to law?" That's starting in verse 1 there. Again, before the unjust and not before the saints, and so forth. In verse 4 it says, "If ye then have judgments of things pertaining to this life, set them to judge who are least esteemed in the church. I speak this to your shame. Is it so that there's not a wise man among you? No, not one that shall be able to judge between his brethren. But brother goeth to law with brother, and that before unbelievers. Now therefore there is utterly a fault among you, because ye go to law one with another. And why do ye not rather take wrong? Why do ye not rather suffer yourselves to be defrauded? Nay, ye do wrong and defraud, and that your brethren." And I think that's something that... we need to remind ourselves, even if it becomes a financial thing, even if it's a careless brother, even if it's a careless brother with the finances that he owes you. Maybe you build a mini barn for him and he's just not paying. Suffer yourself rather to be defrauded. In other words, to be taken advantage of is what I understand that to mean. Allow yourself to be taken advantage of. You know, this is brother to brother. This is not brother to heathen. This is brother to brother. Paul is saying, this is not good. This is not good. And it goes back to that whole idea of fighting for my rights. And here in America, we very much have rights. That we, it's my right to have my property line right, or to have my fence right there, but the neighbor thinks that it ought to be back here. So what about my rights? Suffer yourself to be defrauded. Let's not take those things to law. And rather, if they want to take it to law, if we could deal with them outside of courts, that'd be a way far better way of dealing with that. And even if we are on the losing end, that's all right. As far as finances and as far as materials are concerned, let it be that way. Is what he's saying here. He's saying, let them take advantage of you. Luke 12:4-7. I'm not going to read that for the sake of time. Here Jesus is specifically talking about. I'm thinking of this in light of self-defense. He says, "Don't be afraid of those that kill your body, but rather fear him that can cast both soul and body into hell." He goes more into detail on that. But he says, fear him. Fear him. Fear God. You can't help it if they're chasing you and they end up shooting you. Or if they even take advantage of you financially, they win a court case against you, they whatever. You maybe can't help those things, but you shouldn't fear that. Let them take over. Let them run over. Let them take advantage of you. Let them do all those things. But far more important for you and I to fear him that can cast both soul and body into hell. And that's God. So what about going to war? Just a few scriptures that really, really clearly ring in my mind when I think of going to war. John 18. I think it'd be just good to read that. John 18, verse 33 to 37. A very beautiful picture, Christ's example. I know in this day and age, you speak to so-called Christians and they think you're not doing your duty by not going to war. But they don't understand. They don't understand Christ's teachings when they're saying that and Christ's example when they're saying that. They don't understand that. I believe they're speaking out of ignorance. John chapter 18, verse 33 to 37 says, "Then Pilate entered into the judgment hall again and called Jesus and said unto him, Art thou the King of the Jews? Jesus answered him, Sayest thou that this thing of thyself, or did others tell it thee of me? Pilate answered him, Am I a Jew? Thine own nation and the chief priests have delivered thee unto me. What hast thou done? Jesus answered, My kingdom is not of this world." That's a foundational statement that he makes there. My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight that I should not be delivered unto the Jews. But now my kingdom is not from hence. Actually, I'm just going to stop with that. My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight. And I think of this in America especially. Many Christians are convinced by other so-called Christians that this is a Christian nation. And so this is God's kingdom. We're fighting for right. We're fighting for good. We're fighting for that. We're fighting for freedom. We're fighting for all those things. And they make all kinds of positive claims of why you should go to war. And I believe that Pilate could have challenged Jesus on that very, well, actually he kind of did there. He's like, you're claiming to be a king you're claiming to be a king of these people and they delivered you into my hands. You know, how is that? And Jesus is saying, look, if my kingdom were of this world, they would have had no chance. And I believe that's true too if the United States or any country that you find yourself in would be a kingdom of Christ, no other enemy could come against it. Jesus would defend it with his angels and no enemy would defeat it. But this is not the kingdom that God is that we are to fight in. Not this kingdom in this world. And so that hopefully can give you some answer why you wouldn't go to war, why you wouldn't pick up the gun, why you wouldn't even go into training to make war machines, to go and make, even if you're not standing there with the machine gun, that you're not building the machine gun that goes and that somebody else uses to do that, because you're not part of that kingdom. You're not part of that whole infrastructure, that government system. You understand? Young people, you understand that? Children, you understand that? That's why we don't go to war, because Christ's kingdom is not of the United States. Christ's kingdom is not of what these earthly kingdoms are fighting for. And Jesus' example in that, you think, well, Jesus could just easily say that and he was going to die and so forth. Jesus' example in teaching his disciples is found in Luke 22 and in John 18. Both of those talk about the situation where Peter was there with Jesus. The disciples were there with Jesus. And here the enemy is coming. The enemy, okay? This was the enemy that was, and they were coming with swords and staves. They were coming against Jesus. Like an army, kind of like, to overtake Jesus. Jesus knew all about it. You know, we hear these things that what if you knew that somebody was coming and going to break in the door, what would you do? Well, Jesus knew all of those things beforehand. And he was there with his disciples and so forth. And he knew what was going to transpire and so forth. His disciples did not. And their reaction, their response was, like Peter, he was like scared, and he pulls out his sword and starts whacking. Okay, he missed. I'm not quite sure how he could miss so far with his. Those people I thought used to do quite well with their training and so forth, but maybe he needed more training. I don't think so, but the whole point is he, even in his retaliation in trying to fight for Jesus, he was fighting for a good cause, you know, wasn't he? He was fighting for something that was, he wanted Jesus to be there. He wanted Jesus to be with him. He wanted to protect Jesus. And you and I might find ourselves, we want to protect our family. We might want to protect our things, our possessions. We might want to protect those things. And we pull out that sword. And Jesus says, don't do that. Don't do that. Let it go. And he healed that ear. Interestingly, I am not sure if I copied that. The ESV, I found it very interesting. There's another translation, ESV version, that said something to the effect of stop doing that, or stop. Peter was told to stop. When it says suffer this far, Jesus said stop. Don't do that. That's not the right way. And then he healed. So Jesus, that was Jesus' way of dealing with a confrontation to, even in a worldly sense, from protecting his domain, so to speak, in this earth. Romans chapter 1 talks a little bit about, why don't you just turn to that there really quickly here. I'm almost finished here. But just turn to Romans chapter 1 verse 28. Romans 1:20, it says, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder. That's kind of the word that I was wanting to pull out there. Debate would be, it would fall in the line of the opposite of suffering love. I believe, deceit, malignity, whispers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, I think is pronounced right, I'm not sure, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of God, and that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. And why did I look at these verses? I guess something that just kind of stood out to me in these verses. So there's murder, there's also other things, fornication, wickedness, all those things. But it depends how we view these things and how we, our view of God, and our view of and our understanding of what God wants us to do. If we know these things but don't accept them and don't receive them. We know that the judgment of God is on those that do such things, that murder, backbite, hatred, deceit, all those things. We know that that's how, that those, the judgment of God comes on all those that commit such things, that worthy of death. We not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. If we do that, we will find ourselves in the same situation that Romans talks about, and that is a reprobate mind. In other words, we will lose our mind. We will no longer be able to think clearly, is what I believe it's saying. So it's very important that we, the little irks, the little things that come in my life, and I share this out of need, not out of accomplishing all those things. I know I've experienced the blessing in my life of experiencing that many, many times, but I still face those things. You still face those things. What am I doing? How am I responding? How are you responding? Those little things will have such a huge impact on where we will be when the big thing faces us, or even in judgment as well. And some of these things are very, very, can get very, very personal, very, very, they tread on, step on our toes, very, in a very real way. I guess my encouragement is that we can just be humble. We can allow the Lord to use that bad situation for His good. Let that refine us. Let that purify us. And rather than letting our flesh take over, that we would let the Spirit of God take over. I know there's been a comment made already of, if you're so, and which this is my desire, and I trust is your desire, is being so full of Christ that when that gets jostled and we, you know, well, all that came out was Christ. All that came out was Christ. You know, we do get jostled in life, but what is the response? Is it still love? It's suffering, perhaps, but is it still love? Is it that non-resistance? Here's a poem, just in closing. I'm not quite sure that everything is 100%, but it brings out some very good points, some very deep things. I can give you a copy. I could print them, email them to you if you want to have a copy. It's a public domain poem. I say a poem. It's a little article, I guess. Dying to Self. I don't know how many of you have heard of that poem. Some very, very deep things. I am not sure that I have arrived. Actually, I'm sure that I'm still working on many of these things. I'm sure I am. And I haven't achieved all these things to really come to that place. But that's my goal, and I trust I can share that in that way as an aspiration for you. It says, when you are forgotten or neglected, and take this personally, I'm not saying that you should think of, oh, that's brother so-and-so, oh, that's that situation, or that person really needs to hear it. I'd like to read it in a way, let's take these things in a personal way for ourselves, each one of us. When you are forgotten or neglected or purposely set at naught, and don't sting and hurt with insult or oversight, but your heart is still happy being counted worthy to suffer for Christ, that is dying to self. You know, so often there's a little sting, there's a little hurt, there's a little whatever, and we struggle with it, and then we finally, you know how that struggle happens and goes and whatever. But apparently we're not totally dying dead to self when that happens. When your good is evil spoken of, when your wishes are crossed and your advice disregarded, your opinions ridiculed and your best intentions misinterpreted, and you refuse, this is where you're dying to yourself, and you refuse to let anger rise in your heart or even defend yourself, but rather take it all in patient, loving silence, with knowing that Christ alone is your defender. That is dying to self. When you patiently bear another, bear annoyance, disorder, inconvenience, irregularity, and even unpunctuality from others, when you feel your time has been wasted, and you've been treated harshly and unfairly, and yet you still respond in love, maintaining your peace and enduring these things in meekness as Jesus endured, that is dying to self. When you are unruffled with less than desirable accommodations, uncomplaining with meager food, difficult climates and rearranged travel schedules, and when you maintain cheerfulness even when others are grumpy, when you are loving, kind, and attentive even to those who can do you no benefit by their association, when you remain calm despite interruptions to your agenda and plans by the will of God, that is dying to self. When you don't care to refer to yourself in conversation, when you don't feel the need to boast of your accomplishments and record every good deed you do for the world you see, for the world to see, when you don't itch after commendation and applause, when you don't mind when others are acknowledged and your name ignored, when you're more concerned about being faithful to God's call, when you're okay to be unknown, that's dying to self. When you see your brother prospering and you see him succeeding with a project that you contributed to, and yet you can honestly rejoice with him in spirit, being happy to remain behind the scenes, not questioning God, but being grateful that the work is being accomplished so that God can be glorified, that is dying to self. When you can receive correction and reproof from one of less stature than yourself, and can humbly submit inwardly as well as outwardly, finding no rebellion or resentment rising up within your heart, that is dying to self. There's a scripture reference. I am crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live, yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. And I believe that if we catch a hold of a glimpse of that message of dying to self, I believe we will have less struggle when someone crosses our path. It doesn't matter where that is, if it's in the workplace, if it's in church, if it's out in the road, if it's in neighborhoods, whatever it is. You and I are going to face those things. Everyone, every last one of us is going to face those times when there's people that we grate with, we struggle with, we whatever, but how is my response? How is our response? And like I said, this message is for me. I need it. I need it just as much as you do. Or I believe you do. You all struggle with the same thing. I face these things. And may the Lord just give us that grace to respond right, even when we're caught off guard. But it's important for us to lay that foundation so that we can respond right when we are faced with it. God bless you.